Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today I'm here with my brother, Dr. Patrick Cohn, and sports mom, Julia Dreyer. We're going to talk about what kids should focus on when they're competing.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com and pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. You'll learn the top 5 challenges for sports parents, the top 5 mental game challenges for young athletes, and how you as a parent can help your child feel confident and happy in sports. Again, visit youthsportspsychology.com to pick up the ebook.
Now, Julia, can you begin by telling me what your kids do and how old they are?
I have two daughters who are 16 and 14, and they compete in American Quarter Horse Equestrian all-around events.
Okay. And I understand they've had some mental game coaching from Patrick, and I know they probably have a lot of issues, but one of the big issues has been that they were focusing too much on their main competitors.
Absolutely. I think as children or anybody, any athlete rises in a sport, they pick people who are role models for them, and that's a positive thing to do that turns ultimately into kind of a negative. Children are taught to find out who their stiffest competitor is and then try to beat them, try to be better than them. And what happens when you do that, especially in an event like in which my kids compete, there are a number of very good competitors, and on any given day it could be one of those competitors who puts out the absolute best pattern or ride. And if you're focusing on that one person, you're negating the fact that you've got to beat everyone in the pen. Not that you go in and say, oh, I just have to beat everyone, but if you're focusing on only one competitor, there are many other people who might do something even better than that particular person on whom you're focusing.
And how is that affecting them in competition when they were doing that?
Well, what happens is, you know, as with any athlete, they bring something special to their particular event. And when you focus only on another competitor, you completely forget what you're bringing to the event. And that was what was happening with my children. They would either say, oh, I'm better than that person, or I'm not as good as that person, neither of which were really relevant. That's probably the thing that my children have been able to assimilate best from working with your brother, that they focus on what is relevant. And what's relevant that day to their competition is what they've practiced, what they've rehearsed, what they know how to do, and just breathing and going in and doing it. But when they're focusing on the other competitors, they can't do any of that. They just think about that competitor.
Oh, now, Patrick, can you talk a little bit about this from your point of view, what the girls were doing?
Well, yeah, I call it kind of a self-intimidation. The other competitors aren't really trying to intimidate, but they get intimidated by maybe watching some of the other routines ahead of them and seeing a perfect routine and then comparing their skills against the competitor's skills. And then they feel like, well, geez, that was a perfect routine. I really got to step it up, and I really have to perform well. And that's a lot of pressure and expectation they start putting on themselves, because they seem like, you know, if I don't do a perfect routine, I'm not going to win.
Ah, so now, Julia, can you tell me a little bit more about what it is that they do? Do they don't race?
No, and that's a really good statement, because we've all three of us have talked with your brother about that. We are not racing. We're not running against the clock. We're not running against the competitor so that somebody comes in first. They ride English and Western events in which they're given a pattern about an hour before the class that they're supposed to perform with their horse. There are a number of markers that are put out in the arena, and they perform various maneuvers that the horse and they can do at the various gates. Mm-hmm. And they are judged on both the horse's performance and their particular body position and presentation while they perform those maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
So each horse moves a little differently. Each child or, you know, teenager sits and performs a little differently. And there is no perfect routine. They're human beings, and they don't need to focus on what someone else's routine is.
Right. Now, can you tell me what they would tell you or what they would say to themselves when they were doing the wrong thing and focusing on the wrong issues?
Oh, they would specifically mention a competitor's name and say, oh, did you see what she did? Or, oh, did you see what she was doing in practice? I do that, but maybe I need to do a little more. And for many of these maneuvers, there is no little more. So you're you know, veering into an area of trying to be beyond perfect, which doesn't even exist.
And so when Patrick worked with them, tell me really specifically what they learned.
Well, what they learned was to bring their own routine into the competition with them. And 20 or 30 minutes before, they each have kind of a routine that they go through. They've obviously done their practice. They've been, you know, working with their physical trainers with the horses. And they know all of what they have to do to perform their maneuvers. So it's actually simplifying things prior to the actual performance. And for the 20 minutes or so before, they basically just warm up, get a mental plan for where they're going in the arena for these particular maneuvers, not actually rehearse the maneuvers anymore. That's all done long prior to the competition. And it's just a matter of piecing those together. And then they pick visual markers to which they're going to ride. And then the last 5 minutes is basically sitting on, you know, on deck, breathing, calming down a bit, and talking to themselves about why they belong here and why they're good at this, instead of focusing on what someone else is doing.
You said that very well. Patrick, can you talk a little bit about how you would apply this strategy, say, in a team sport like basketball?
Well, I think some of the same concepts is to not make comparisons to other competitors, not put the other team or other competitors on a pedestal and look at their skills and compare them to your skills. In team sports, you have to focus on your warm-up and getting ready and thinking about your assignments. All the things about the other team, their skills and their speed and their size or their height, none of that really matters. The only thing that matters is getting ready to perform your particular assignments. For example, if you're a quarterback in football, the quarterback has to think about the plays are going to run and rehearse those in his mind and go over what's important for execution and not be self-intimidated or psyched out by the skills of the opponent.
Now, I'm curious, how does this happen? Do you go out into the field with these girls, Patrick, and talk to them there? Do you talk to them in a room with a couch? How does it all happen?
No, there's no shrinking going on here. It's just sitting down. It's just we sit down in my office and we talk about their routines and their thought processes, and we address any mental errors that we can identify, and then we talk basically about good focusing skills, focusing on the right area, being confident, bringing confidence, trusting what they practiced and trained. Very basic principles, and I look at it more as I'm educating them on a different area of their performance. It's not necessarily the physical performance, but hopefully it affects the physical performance. We're talking about their mental performance and how well they can concentrate. Very simple, basic skills.
Now, Julia, as a sports parent, what did you do specifically to help your kids with this issue? First, they dealt with Patrick, and I assume that you learned what he was trying to impart to them, and then you must have supported that message.
Well, actually, I did. I also compete, so it brings a little bit more of a complication to the process because I can interfere too much, and having them go over their own mental plans with Patrick and have an idea of what they need to do when they get into the arena, I'm able to step back and watch them and just enjoy what they're doing, be proud of their efforts, be proud of their successes, you know, give them a hug when they don't have success, and not have to feel like I'm responsible for that whole process, because in the end, I can't go in the arena with them anyway. And it's nearly excruciating being not only their parent, but also competing in the same types of events and knowing exactly what they should be doing. But that brought more pressure, and that's part of the reason that we went to talk to Patrick, because obviously we all had things that we wanted to work on, but it allowed me to, again, be their mom, their dad, and I get to sit in the stands and watch them compete and enjoy their efforts.
Now, what would your advice be to other sports parents? Because I guess you're not exactly saying that sports parents should totally back off. Would you suggest that they – read about or learn some of these techniques and teach them to their kids and then step back?
Absolutely, and actually, I know that Patrick has materials available for that that the parents wouldn't even have to teach the children. They're easily understandable. They're easily applicable. You can see yourself in the problems. All athletes have problems because we're people, and we bring that into our sport. But, you know, I was thinking about that before our conversation, and, you know, one of the things that we as parents do is try to supply our kids with all the best things that we can. And with athletes, that obviously means equipment and coaches and all of those things that we make investments in order to help them improve their skills. But this, to me, putting your head in the right place is probably the, in the end, the least expensive piece of equipment that you can buy because it's always with you. It's a tool that's in your own personal toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while we can make investments in many other things, helping kids move themselves out of the way and supporting them and loving them while they compete,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it's the best we can do for them.
And do you find that they're able to transfer some of these skills to other areas of their life?
Yes, absolutely. It's very interesting. My oldest daughter took the ACTs, one of the college acceptance tests, a few months ago, and she has strengths in one area and feels that she doesn't have strengths in another area that we're being tested on. This particular instrument, and she said to me just prior to walking into the test, you know, I'm just going to use the same thing that I use when I compete and tell myself that I'm going to relax and be good with the things that I'm strong and not worry about the things that I don't think I'm strong. In other words, her competitor, the test.
Right.
And she said she felt much calmer taking this test.
That's
so, yeah, it's pretty broad-based.
That's a great example. Now, Julia, I have one other question. Your girls compete at a pretty high level, and so do you. In fact, you're at a big event right now as we're speaking, correct?
Yes, actually, I'm at the World Championships for my division.
And your girls, what kind of level do they compete at?
Well, they compete on a national and world level as well. Their World Championships were in August, and just this is a pretty good example of the mental process. My daughter had a very good pattern and a very good ride. And they show before five judges. Three of the judges were highly favorable of her performance. One was not, and that kept her from the finals. And she was, it's her best event, and she was pretty devastated by it. And their competition goes in August at the world level and then in October at the national level. It's a little backwards because of school. But she had to come back and compete at the national level with one of the judges to whom she had shown at the World Show in the same event. And she had to actually ride a couple of patterns behind the girl who had just won the World Championship. So a lot of things that she could have focused on, the competitor, how good she was, how the judge deemed her to be, the bad experience that Kaylee had had herself. And she just said, I erased all of that. I just thought, I only have to ride for this 2 minutes, this pattern, and I'm just going to do my mental rehearsal, relax, calm down, trust my horse, and go in and ride. And she ended up being the reserve champion.
Wow.
She had, and, you know, it was very interesting. She went very early in the order of go and had to wait for about 90 more people to show. And she said, you know, afterwards, I don't really care where I end up, because I had the best ride that I've ever had.
And that's the most important thing. Patrick, can you comment on this great story?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a great success story, being able to deal with those challenges and some of the past failures. And, that, you know, that's a sign of a really, you know, a champion athlete, the ability to bounce back, learn from your failures, improve upon yourself, and then go in and be able to put that all aside and do your best. I think it's a great story.
That is. And, Julia, thank you so much for sharing your story at a time when you're, I know, really busy. And thank you, Patrick.
Okay,
thank you,
Lisa.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com and pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes.